Hi, I'm Leon Gorin, president of PEO Leadership, a peer-to-peer leadership advisory firm. We're an amazing community of CEOs, presidents, and senior executives. Ask yourself, are you learning as fast as the world is changing? It's time for Ontario business leaders to band together for counsel and support. It's time for you to tap into the business wisdom of our peer groups and unlock new ways to grow. I want you to come out of this COVID crisis a better leader and your organization ready for what's next. Take the first step at peo-leadership.com.
This morning, I am very excited to welcome Harry Kramer Jr., Professor of Management and Strategy at Northwestern's University, Kellogg School of Management, where he teaches the MBA and the Executive MBA program. Harry is also an executive partner at Madison Dearborn Partners. It's one of the largest private equity firms in the U.S. and is the former chairman of and CEO of Baxter International. In fact, I think he became the CEO at 43 years of age. He's going to talk to us today about life and how he does that at 43 and balancing it all. Harry's the best-selling author of From Values to Action, Becoming the Best, and fingers crossed, soon to be your 168, Finding Purpose and Satisfaction in a Value-Based Life. So, Harry, thank you so much for joining us today. It's great to have you here. And I love your book. I love the latest book. So.
Well, it's great to be with you, Leon, and I look forward to spending some time with everybody, and hopefully we'll have a really good discussion. As you and I talked about, you got a great group, and rather than a monologue or rather than me, you know, putting up some PowerPoints, you and I can have a good discussion and hopefully encourage everybody to just jump in and make it more of a dialogue so we can all learn a little something. I always learn something when it's interactive as opposed to a monologue, so happy to do it.
No, that's awesome. So actually, just logistically for everyone. So what we've done is we typically use the group chat. So when you have questions, post your questions and then we'll come to you. I'll have you come off mute and then ask the question directly to Harry as well. So that would be great. Apparently, if you hit the space bar, it'll also allow you to ask questions. So don't hit the space bar yet. Let us get going and then we can try that out and see how it goes. So Harry, you had a whole book on leadership. Then you talked about organizations becoming the best. Tell us how you got into the year 168. And I know you're the mathematician. And for some of them, I don't know if everybody even understands the 168, where that comes from.
Okay, so a couple things, Leon. And it really is great to be with everybody. And I'm looking forward to people kind of like jumping in, as I said. So the reality of it, Leon, was I ended up going to Northwestern. So I still have my Northwestern shirt. And I went to the Kellogg School and I had the opportunity to go to work for Baxter, Baxter Healthcare, Baxter International. And I always say, Leon, I went there for 2 years as a junior financial analyst. I forgot to leave and I was there for 25 years. Small divisions, large divisions, international. I had the opportunity to be the chief financial officer, the president, and then the chairman and CEO. But I always tell the Kellogg students, I never really left Kellogg because I went to a small college in Wisconsin, Lawrence University. I was a math major. And the way I paid my way through Kellogg is I graded all the finance papers for the finance faculty, right? Because if you're a math major, the only thing you know is numbers. And that worked out great. And when I was graduating, the fellow who had been my finance professor, Don Jacobs, famous guy, he was probably considered one of the top two or three deans in the last 50 years. He became the dean of the school. And I said, hey, congratulations, Professor Jacobs. Goodbye. I'm out of here. And he says, you're not going anywhere because Baxter's in Chicago. I know where you live. And, I know where you are. So for 25 years, Dean Jacobs would call me every 2 weeks and he'd say, I need you on a panel. I need you to be a guest speaker. And I made the mistake of saying that if it wasn't for Kellogg, I wouldn't have been the CEO of a $12 billion company. He said, I will never let you forget that. So full circle, Leon, I guess it was now 14 years ago, the day it was announced I was stepping down as the chairman and CEO of Baxter, he called me that day. He was 80 years old. He was the dean emeritus. He said, boy, I just saw it come over the tape that you're leaving Baxter. Thank God. You've been there for 25 years. I want you to teach. And I said, Dean Jacob, you don't mean like have a syllabus, great. I run companies. That's not happening. He said, I think you said you do whatever I told you to do. And being one of these very deferential guys, I said, yeah, I did say that. He thought I was going to do finance because I had been a finance student and a chief financial officer. And I said, Northwestern, like a lot of the schools that all of you went to, they got a lot of PhDs, pretty smart, bright people. I said, I got an MBA. I can't compete with these people. And he said, what do you want to do? I said, I want to focus on leadership, value, and ethics. Of course, this was 14 years ago. At least in this country, the need for leadership has gone on astronomically in the last 14 years. I won't make any comments, but I'd be tempted to, but I won't. In reality, I not only like this, I love this. Because as any of you who've done any teaching know, until you can explain something clearly to a group of bright people, you may think you understand it, but not really. And to be able to focus on leadership, value, and ethics, I'm into this, Leon, in a very big way. So I teach 3 days a week, the full-time program, the part-time, the executive MBA, and then 2 days a week, I'm affiliated with Madison Dearborn, as you said, and I'm always on 10 boards, chairman of 3 companies, all in healthcare. And I like teaching so much. The main reason I continue to do the private equity stuff is it gives me an unlimited amount of material to use when I teach. I just have to change the names to protect the innocent and the guilty. So that's the that's where this comes. And as you know, Leon, I do talks like this a couple times a week to raise money for folks that are a student of mine started the 1 Acre Fund in Africa. So all the proceeds from the talks and the books, it all goes to an organization that everybody ought to take a look at called the 1 Acre Fund in Africa. So the last part of this quick little monologue, Leanne, is I start teaching, all right? I don't know if I told you this. I start teaching. And about 2 years into this, one of my students, very, very serious fellow, Indian fellow, Samir Goltal, he says, you need to write a book. And I said, I don't even write short emails. I mean, I'm not writing a book. And he goes, no, you need to write a book. And I was so used to with 55,000 team members saying no, and it kind of ended. But with these students, you know, you're a teacher, it's a whole different deal. And so he then said to me, can I take your class again? And I said, hey, you took the class. I mean, are you slow? I mean, I don't have any more. That's everything I've got. And he said, no. He said, I'm going to take your class again because I'm going to audio tape it. And if you don't write a book, I'm just going to print up the notes. Right. So, having 5 kids, I'm used to people having a lot of enthusiasm for a short period of time. This kid comes to every class, audio tapes it, and 3 weeks after the last class, he comes to my office, Leon, and he gave me 250 double-spaced pages of the oral transcription of my class, which I thought, hey, this is good. But then when I read it, I realized it's like reading a deposition, right? This is going to end my teaching career before I get started. So I tried to work this out, and I thought, you know what? After 6 weeks, I had one chapter, and I thought, when I'm 90 and I'm in a nursing home, I'll finish this up for the grandchildren. And he called me again. He goes, where are we with the book? I'm going to self-publish this thing. I said, no. I said, I got one chapter. He said, that's all I need. And I thought, what are you going to do? And he says, well, you'll get mad at me. And I said, what do you mean get mad at you? He says, well, I've got you an agent, and we're getting really frustrated how long this has taken. So long story short, he connects me with Wiley. 10 months later, I have this book called From Values to Action, which, as you know, Leon, is literally all about how do you become a value-based leader? No kidding around. What does it really mean to be a value-based leader? And this student of mine who started this 1 Acre Fund, who's been in Africa for 10 years, I said, you're the best living example of From Values to Action. So when I'm not running around teaching on these boards, I'll do these talks. So I thought, that's the end of that. Well, because we've sold so many books, because I give so many talks, Leon, and I would say, can you buy the books if I give the talks? The publisher called and said, well, 4 years ago, what is everybody talking about now? And I said, well, that's how you be a value-based leader. But how do you build a value-based organization? How do you think about building teams, building networks, dealing with customers, and all the things that everybody on this call does? Well, that led to the second book, which was Becoming the Best, Building a World-Class Organization. Well, that took me a year to do, and I thought, Leon, I'm done now. I mean, I'm really done. I'm just going to teach. I got the 2 books, and a lot of times when I give the talks, people buy the books for the 1 Acre Fund. Well, then about a year ago, the publisher called again, and they said, hey, what do you think, what are the students asking you now? When you're doing things for CEO groups, what's the big question? And I said, well, they're really asking now, how do you live a value-based life? Yes, I got this great job. I've got this great career. But no kidding around, how do I live a value-based life? And I said, well, boy, that comes up a lot. I'll focus on that, but give me a couple of years. And I don't know if I told you this, Leon, they got me because they said, we'll tell you what, if you agree to get the next book done by March, we'll make a very large contribution to the 1 acre fund in Africa. So I said, okay, here we go. So it came out. And the question that everybody asked, Leon, and you asked it, was the book is called Year 168. What's the story with this 168? And the CEO last week said to me, he goes, hey, all the people in my company want to get this book, but what is the 168? And I'll call the guy Charlie. I said, Charlie, when you've got an incredible week and you're working like crazy, how do you describe it? And he goes, well, if I work crazy. He said, geez, it's all I'm doing. He said, it's like 24/7. I said, all right, now, I know you're not a math major, but multiply it out. 24 times 7, carry the 2. It's usually 168, usually, if you can multiply correctly, right? So the whole idea, Leon, is every single person on this call, every single one of us, has 168 hours in a week. That's what you got. That's what you got. And that the key thing, as you well know, Leon, and it's very consistent with what your PO does, is you got to ask yourself, how are you going to spend your 168? What are your values? What's your purpose? You know, no kidding around, what really matters? You know, is it all about the money? Is it all about success? Is it about significance? Is it, you know, your resume or is it your legacy? Literally trying to give people a framework, as I know you do with your organization, to think this through. And so we're having a lot of fun with this, Liam. We're having a lot of fun with this, trust me. A lot of fun.
You had a quote in your book. It was your dad, so Senior Kramer, I guess. Have you ever seen a hearse going to a cemetery with a U-Haul attached to it? And I go, that is fantastic. And it comes to becoming aware, self-aware, right? And that's, I guess, the premise of the book starts with that in terms of understanding. How do you do that? How would you start advising some of the people on the call of, because a lot of people freak out about that. And you write about that too, right? They go, God, okay.
Yeah.
Or they jump into it too quickly.
So Glenn, great question. And again, people can jump in here. So now this is fantastic. I mean, I'm in this in a big way, Leon. Here's the fun part of this, right? So even though I don't know all the people on the call, what could I guess? I'm going to guess virtually everybody on this call, if we're honest, has at least 2 or 3 times the number of things to do than you're ever going to get it done. I don't mean to disappoint people on a Friday morning, but if you think about your job, your career, your family, maybe your spirituality, your health, a little bit of sleep occasionally, okay, a little exercise, a little bit of fun, and hopefully there's enough people at this level who realize we're here for a blink of an eye. Maybe we have a moral obligation to make the world a better place while we're passing through. Now, if you're as conscientious as most of the folks on this call, the usual reaction is, we'll just go faster and faster, okay? Well, this is where the multitasking starts, right? And now, because we've got all these little devices, right? Well, all of a sudden, we can just multitask. And the question that I ask folks, and this is a good one, Leon, for people just to write down and find a little quiet place to ask themselves, have we confused activity and productivity? We're very active. It's amazing, Leon, how active we are, right? If you and I are in a meeting, it ends 15 minutes early. I got 15 minutes. I can cruise through, you know, 20 emails, 40 texts, maybe a couple Snapchats, whatever the heck that is. And I'm in motion. We're just all in motion. And I think the people, I truly believe, Leon, that really are the best leaders are the people who literally say, you know what? I'm going to take a step back. For a short period of time, I'm going to turn off the noise, turn off the distractions, get off by myself someplace, and ask myself some of these questions. Like, what are my values? What is my purpose? What really matters? What kind of a leader do I want to be? What kind of example do I want to have for people on my team? And I'm well aware, Leon, at least for me, I'm not capable of thinking about that when I'm doing 10 other things at the same time. But taking a little bit of time to think about it helps me separate out activity and productivity. It helps me, Leon, get, as I call it, from the roots to the trees to the forest. Putting it in perspective globally. What are we trying to accomplish? How does this all fit together? Because I often tease executives. I did this at Kellogg a couple months ago. We had a big group of C-level officers. And I said, you know, how many of you are familiar with that expression? Well, hey, Joe's really good, but he sort of has a hard time getting from the trees to seeing the forest. People raise their hand. I said, I got to tell you, I've worked with a lot of people that are in the root system. Okay. They haven't even seen a tree yet. Okay. And that ability to put it all in perspective becomes really key. And that's hard to do when you're running around like a crazy person. So this whole idea of self-reflection becomes important. Then, Leon, I'll always say, Dean Jacobs always taught me, when you talk about something, try to define what it's not. So when I say self-reflection, this is not self-absorption. This isn't studying the cosmos or spending an hour contemplating your navel. No. This is, what are your values? What are you gonna do about it? And students will then kind of push me a little bit, Leon. They'll say, well, can you give me an example? Can you give me an example? And I'll say, well, I'll give you an example, but I said, what's your problem? They'll say, well, Harry, I just don't have the time. I don't have the time. And I'll tease people to say, is it you don't have the time, or is this something, Leon, you really don't want to do? Because this could get a little unnerving, right? There could be a little bit of a difference between what you say is important and what you're actually doing. That may be a little too close to home. I don't know, but we're talking about leadership. Leaders are willing to challenge themselves. Leaders are willing to put themselves out there, right? And when somebody says to me, Leon, well, I don't think I've got the time, I'll say, well, most of us commute someplace, right? Some of us try to exercise. You can do this exercise when you're taking a walk or going for a jog or just sitting somewhere on a park bench. And some people pray or meditate, right? So is it we don't have the time, or is it something we don't want to do? And maybe I'd say, Leon, for some of you, I don't know, some of you may have gotten up early this morning and done this or taken a walk or whatever. But when the students push me for examples, and I talk about this in the book, Leon, as you know, I've had the habit now for almost 40 years. I do a 15-minute self-examination at the end of every night. I'm not a morning guy, 5 kids, a lot of running around, a lot of crazy, a lot of flights. I take 15 minutes at the end of the day. And for me, it's sort of called a self-examination. Mine goes like this, and I can send you the questions. Most of them are in the book, Leon. But it, yeah. For me, it goes like this. What did I say I was going to do today? What did I actually do? What am I proud of? What am I not proud of? How did I lead people? How did I follow people? If I lived today over again, what would I have done differently? And then the last one for me, Leon, is if I have tomorrow, being fully well aware that sooner or later I won't, but if I do have tomorrow and I'm a learning person, based on what I learned today, how will I operate differently tomorrow? On whatever dimension of your life has any importance to you, right? As a parent, as a spouse, as a leader, as a follower, whatever your spiritual orientation. It literally puts, Leon, everything into perspective. And then you can start to realize, you know, there's certain things, by the way, that we all do that we don't even realize. In fact, Leon, I was mentioned this to a group of CEOs on a call like this a couple weeks ago. I said to them, it turns out, and this is true for everybody on this call, Leon, anybody can decide or figure out whether somebody else is self-reflective by talking to them for about 15 minutes. That's all it takes. And the reason for that, Leon, is if people are not self-reflective, they're constantly surprised, and you're surprised, they're surprised, okay? So the example I sort of give is, I'll at O'Hare Airport in Chicago, I'll run into a former student, and I'll say, hey, Phyllis, you know, how are you doing? Well, Professor Kramer, no, Harry, I'm just really surprised. Well, Phyllis, what are you surprised by? Well, I have two young boys, and I have no relationship with my two sons. I'm just really surprised. I said, well, Phyllis, do you spend time with your two boys? No, I don't spend any time with them at all, okay? Well, I'm surprised you're surprised. In fact, what anybody on the call can do, Leon, it's kind of fun because the weekend's coming. Sometime in the next 2 or 3 days, Leon, I guarantee you somebody will say to you that they're surprised. You will say to them, oh, why are you surprised? They'll tell you why, but you'll be thinking, Leon, I'm surprised you're surprised. Because if you're self-reflective, there's not that many things to be surprised by, right? You guys are all in businesses. There are, you know, the reality of life is sooner or later, you don't get the job you wanted. The company didn't perform as well as you wanted. You know, somebody you love and care about passes away and dies. It's all very unfortunate, okay? But it really shouldn't be a surprise.
That's interesting. That surprise in particular, I work with a lot of successful leaders who are no longer, some of them no longer CEOs. They've made their money. And it's interesting, we sit around the table still because they're talking about other, and their surprise has always been, I have put so many hours into my job, 100 hours a week, whether it be in private equity. And today I sit there and I go, I've done everything I thought I needed to do for my family, yet I got problems with my kids. And it's almost, it hits you in the face. I go, well, that's not really a surprise, is it? I mean, you spend no time with your kids right. during the 25, 30 years that you were working like crazy.
Yeah. So and it really is remarkable, Leon, because you reach the point and say, and here's how open I am. If somebody says to me, again, this may surprise you. If somebody says to me, hey, my job is more important than anything else. And if I have to sacrifice my relationship or my children or whatever, that's what I'm going to do. Now, many of us would say, whoa, I wouldn't want to do that. But the one benefit for that person is they won't be surprised. Okay. There's just a lot of really surprised people walking around. And it happens at every age. And here's the other big benefit of this, Leon. I say to folks, if we're really honest and you got a good group, what are things that we end up doing more often than we wish we did, but they seem to be hard to control? And I say, well, I think it's a little bit like worry, fear, anxiety, pressure, and let's not forget about stress. Now, what do you know about worry, fear, anxiety, pressure, and stress? What do you know? Well, not productive, waste of time, not good for your health, okay? But if Carol's upset about something and I say, hey, Carol, hey, don't worry about it. Well, she's already worried. It's a little too late. So what I realized was, well, wait a minute. Why don't I think about these things before they happen, okay? Because if there's not that many surprises, if you think about it, when things are going well, and I'm sure all of you guys have had that period, when the company's doing well and things are going great and sales are going great, what a great time. What do you want to do when things are going great? I said to myself, enjoy the moment, have gratitude, live in the moment, really, really appreciate the moment, have a party. But before the party ends, ask yourself, Leon, this one simple question. What am I going to do when? Because as you guys know, it isn't if. What are you going to do when things turn down? And through this self-reflection exercise many years ago, and this sounds overly simplistic because I'm giving you the summary of what's like a three-hour class, Leon, but I decided, you know what I'm going to do? When bad things happen, I'm going to do two things. Number one, with a lot of help, I'm going to try to do the right thing. And number two, we will do the best we can do. Now, that's all. I literally will say that five times a day, Leon, because first of all, when I say I'll try to do the right thing, that has a big asterisk, right? What is the right thing? Well, I better surround myself with people a lot brighter than I am so that when something bad happens in an uncertain world with a lot of good people help, we'll try to do the right thing, right? And then we'll do the best we can do. And here's the secret formula on this. If you can convince yourself, and you guys should challenge this and jump on and question this. If you can convince yourself that no matter what happens, and I mean no matter what happens, I'll try to do the right thing. I'll do the best I can. I would argue worry, fear, anxiety, pressure, and stress can be significantly reduced. By definition, you can never eliminate them, right? Welcome to the human race. And we've all had bosses or boards that would say, hey, Leon, you know, a little bit of pressure is not all bad. The problem is we got a lot more than a little bit, right? And I got to tell you, I know I'm talking about this quickly, Leon, but, you know, when you read the material, it has an enormous impact, right? So here's the example I gave to a CEO the other day. For me, okay, so here I am now. It's Friday. I don't know what's going to happen tomorrow. I don't know what's going to happen Saturday. What's the worst nightmare for me? I think the worst nightmare for me tomorrow, honestly, Leon, is something happens to Julie, my wife, or something happens to one of the five kids. Now, I'll do everything I can to prevent it. I'll pray for it. I'll try to work on it. But if that does happen tomorrow, I already know what I will do, Leon. I'll try to do the right thing. I'll do the best I can do because that's all I can do. And I mention that to folks very honestly because when I think of all the issues that you guys have got, you know, the economy, you know, dealing with the craziness in the United States, all the crazy things we're dealing with. It either overwhelms you, Leon, or you say, you know what? I'll put it in perspective. I'll try to do the right thing. I'll do the best I can do. And part of this for me comes from going on, I do an annual 3-day silent retreat. That's where part of this comes from. But also, I was very blessed, Leon, that my grandfather lived with us when I was growing up. And I'm a great believer in talking to people, you know, that are in their 80s and 90s that have been in this movie, seen the movie. And I always remember is when I was first starting at Baxter, and, you know, you're younger, you see some of the craziness that's going on. And I would literally say, Grandpa, you're not going to believe what happened today. You're not going to believe what these guys did today. And he'd sit me down and he'd say, Harry, that's why they call it work. That's why they call it work. And then he'd lean forward, he'd get that little Irish twinkle in his eye, and he'd say, let me give you some advice, young fella. He said, tomorrow when you go to work, if there are no problems and there are no issues, you may not have a job. And I thought, yeah. Well, that became such a big part of me, Leon. I don't think it was more than, 12, 13 years later, I end up as the CEO. Right. And Leon, you're one of my executive vice presidents. You come into my office. And you said, Harry, I got a real problem. I say, well, Leon, that's good for you. Right. I mean, you still have a job. And the fellow who's my general counsel, we had a party a while ago. He reminded me of this the first time, right after, a couple weeks after I became the CEO, he walks into my office and I'll call him Charlie. He goes, Harry, we're going to get sued. We're really going to get sued. And I said, well, Charlie, let's slow down a minute. That's probably good for you, right? And he goes, well, how the hell could that be good? I said, well, Charlie, let's think about it real simply. If I never, ever get sued, why the hell are you here? What do I need a lawyer for? And he goes, yeah, I guess that's right. So, Leon, this has nothing to do with being complacent. I mean, we care a lot. I care an awful lot. But You got to keep it in perspective. And people would say to me, Leon, I get this one all the time. You know, you got $12 billion company at 55,000 people. Harry, what keeps you awake at night? And I'd say, by the time I go to sleep, nothing keeps me awake. And if it takes me more than 5 minutes to go to sleep, I'll read another book for a while. I got to tell you, Leon, I have absolutely no time for worry, fear, anxiety, pressure, and stress. I just don't.
That's awesome.
I mention this to you guys because if you can get there, however you get there, is it going for a walk in the morning? Is it clearing out your head at night? Is it convincing yourself that, hey, you know what? I'm a good person, but I'm going to make mistakes. And there's things that are going to go wrong, but try to do the right thing, to do the best I can do.
That's awesome. Simple deal. All right. I want to open it up for questions. Okay, everyone, you start throwing the questions through the group chat. I can ask Harry a million questions here because there's lots going on, but start throwing the questions. I'm going to come to you. Harry, let me ask you a question. You know, you led Baxter, you wrote Now 168. As a leader, it's interesting. I know a lot of leaders think about this. I'm thinking about their employees, right? And talking to them about them thinking about their 168, right? Whether it's your leadership team or it goes right down to the bottom, the guys that are on the front lines.
Yeah.
How do you as a leader, and you had to do this, and I read some of it as you went through back, how are you managing that? Because you also want performance, you want them there. There are times that they're gonna work that whole night, right? And things are gonna be out of whack.
Yeah.
And you need to get that done as a leader because your head's accountable to the board. How do you manage the two? I know this book came after those days, but yeah, you must have lived that experience.
Well, absolutely, Len. And again, I got to tell you, Len, I didn't know what you were going to ask, but this is great because you're asking great. That's why I always love to do this unprepared because it's a lot better. So, a couple thoughts. First of all, Leon, I think this is boy, there's so many things to talk about. This piece you're making is a good point. Sometimes when people talk about, you know, you're 168 or whatever, or it gets into this issue of balance, right? Very, very often there's this almost this tense thing of, oh, wait a minute, we can't be talking about that because we got to get the job done. And so to make this very, very clear, Leon, I never walk away from the fact we have got to perform. We've got to make it happen. This is not, but where this gets crazy, maybe show of hands, How many of you have heard this expression? It's not just the U.S. or Canada. I think it's worldwide. This expression, work-life balance. How many have heard this expression? Just a little show of hands. All right. Here's what I want you to do. A little fun exercise, right? I'm going to say this expression really slowly on, and I'd like everybody to say it to themselves out loud. Okay? So here we go. Work-life balance. Now, maybe it's my mathematical background or looking, but work-life balance sounds like you're either working or you're living, okay? Now, some of us are working enough. If that's not living, that could be a problem, right? So about 20 years ago, Leon, I decided I'm never going to talk about work-life balance because it doesn't make any sense. What I'm going to talk about for myself and my team is life balance. Life balance, because I've never yet met a person who isn't trying to balance their life, right? So what I did when the first book came out, Leon, I literally went around the world and I asked about 300 people, how do you think about life balance? What does that mean to you? And very similar to the principles you use at PEO, is I literally realized that people like to talk about buckets. And some people said, well, there's three buckets that are important to me. Some people said there were eight buckets, but there was an amazing normal distribution around six buckets because not everybody used all six, but six covered 98% of people. And in no particular order, and it's all in the book, but as you know, Leon, here are six for you. First bucket, your career, your education, your growth, right? Second bucket, your family, your friends, people that are important to you. The third bucket, for some of us, your spirituality, whatever that means to you, preparing for eternity or whatever it means to you. A fourth bucket, health, all right? That includes taking care of yourself, eating right, a little bit of sleep, a little bit of exercise, right? A fifth bucket, I just refer to as fun, enjoyment, going to the ball game, going to the movies, sitting outside, whatever. And then the sixth bucket, some people call it social responsibility. I call it being a best citizen. Right? How do you make a difference as an organization, as an individual, the short time you happen to be here, right? So you got six buckets. And the exercise that I have people do, and big, big warning here, Leon, big, big warning, never attempt, I'm talking to you, Leon, never attempt this exercise unless you're in a really good mood. Be in a really good mood in this exercise. Because here's the program, Leon. You take those six, right? Your career, family, spirituality, health, fun, making a difference. And you ask yourself, on average, because every weeks are different, right? You and I may be working on a big project and work, but on average, what percent of your time as a goal would you want in each of those six? Okay, that's the first column. The second column is you look at your calendar, Leon, for the last 6 months, and you look at find an average week. What's current reality look like, right? And the third column is the difference. Now, I've yet to meet the person. I'm looking at names here. You know, maybe it's Sharon who says, well, there's an amazing coincidence. My goal lines up with exactly where I'm spending my time. Okay. I've yet to meet that person. Most of us, we're human. There's a difference. Now, is the difference small? Okay. Because none of us are perfect. But if it's a big difference, is it because, well, I said that was important, but it's not really important? Or, oh, no, it really is. But I don't have my act together to spend the time where I really wanted to spend it. And what I've often tell people is, oh, by the way, I know this sounds simple, but I keep things simple, Leon. Here's one key to this. The sum of those percentages, those six percentages, the sum cannot exceed 100%. Okay. That's just a little warning. And some people will say to me, well, that's obvious. Oh, no, it's not obvious because I don't know if you guys have had this experience, but my first boss at Baxter, 2 weeks into it, Leon, he sat me down and he said, Kramer, I'm going to need 110% from you. And I remember thinking to myself, what is he talking about, right? I mean, I'm going to give it my all, but there's only 100%. Have a pie. How do you have more than 100% of a pie,
that's
right?
That's your mathematician again, Aaron. It's your mathematician talking.
That's my mathematician again. Yeah, you know, I'm going to work harder than most people, but there's only 100%. And I actually ended up getting an argument with that guy. It didn't go well. He was the boss, but I outlived the guy for sure. I outlived the guy. He didn't make it. I did, so it worked okay. So you got 168 hours, and what I think becomes really important is taking the time to really think through what really matters. And on a serious note, whether it's the folks on the call or your teams, I'm sure, Leanne, you've had this with your teams, I will get calls from folks and they would say, Harry, I want to be very open. I want to be very open. I'm having trouble balancing things. I'm really having trouble balancing my life. And my observation is the great majority of people that are having trouble balancing their lives haven't been self-reflective enough to figure out what they're trying to balance, right? Because if you haven't, you said it earlier, Leanne, if you haven't figured out what's important, how could you possibly balance it, right? You know, okay, well, how could you have a relationship with your children if you don't spend any time with them, right? How could you have a relationship with your spouse if you don't spend any time? And do you know where you're spending your time? See, this may sound odd if you haven't thought about this a lot, but Leon, it's an amazing difference to me of the number of people who don't realize where they're spending their time. A great example, and maybe some of you have had this experience, but I had one senior executive who worked for me, and he called me and he said, Harry, I'd like to have a private discussion with you. And I said, hey, you know, hey, Fred, you know, anything for the team? What? He goes, well, I got marital issues. I have problems with my three kids. I'd really love to talk to you about it. And I said, hey, I have no answers. No, but you got a lot of opinions. I'd love to sit down with you. I said, all right, well, hey, Fred, tomorrow's Saturday. Why don't you come on over? We'll sit on the back porch. We can talk about it. Well, I can't do it tomorrow. I'm golfing tomorrow. I said, all right, well, hey, Sunday after church, do you want to stop by? Well, I'm golfing on Sunday, right? Now, again, it's the math thing in me. I'm thinking, I think it takes 5 hours to do that. He's doing it twice, that's 10 hours. Now, if the guy wants to admit to himself that golf is more important than the relationship with his spouse or his kids, I'm not going to judge that. But the guy seems to be surprised, okay? And I'm surprised he's surprised, okay? And so,
I love that example. You had that in the book. I was reading that and laughing as I was reading that.
Yeah, it's actually remarkable, Leon.
That happens in everything, actually. It's not just family life. It's business too, right? They got problems. Absolutely. They're stuck. And you go, okay, well, let's sit down. And you pick the time. They're not there. And then you wonder, well, here's the problem. You can't even spend enough time to think about it in terms of what you need to do. I want to go to some questions, Harry, because otherwise they're piling in now.
Before we head into the Q&A portion of this webcast, first, a brief note about PO leadership from one of our members.
What I love about PEO leadership right now is how well our members are supporting each other and rising to face the COVID-19 challenge.
Paul Zadorsky, Senior Vice President, Crayola International.
Business is all about being able to rapidly adapt to change, but how do you learn as fast as the world changes?
PEO leadership lets you tap into the collective wisdom of some of Canada's top executives.
Having that peer group and broader leadership community to lean on, it makes all the difference.
The time to step up and lead is now. Go to peo-leadership.com.
Let's start with Sean Hubbard. Sean, you want to come off mute and talk to Harry directly?
Sure. Thanks a lot, Leon. Hi, Harry.
Hey, Sean, how are you?
I'm doing well. So the value-based, love that perspective. And one of the challenges I see is actually getting leaders on board with actually practicing their values. Because as you said off the top, it's painful, right? It's painful, that recognition of this is what I say I believe in, yet I keep doing this thing. And that gap is... well, not fun to kind of acknowledge that. So what success have you had at convincing leaders to actually take themselves on? Just any type of tips on that?
Sure. And Sean, are these, to stay off mute here, are these people who work for you or peers or what, because it depends on where they are.
Yeah. And I would say it's at all levels.
Okay.
All levels, right? So I'm saying you can talk to a junior person, same example of, yeah, this is really bothering me and I'm having this terrible relationship with Bob. I'm like, do you want to fix it? Well, no, I'd rather bitch and complain about it. And then all the way up to the CEO.
Yeah. So here's the way I think about it. And Sean, it's a fabulous question. So the way I look at it is I break it into three pieces, right? And I'll just role play this thing. If you work for me, if you're a member of my team, Sean, I kind of view that as probably the easiest one, because the first way I try to impact people is through my own behavior, all right? If through my own behavior and my own example, and people see the success of that, I can impact a tremendous amount of people, right? And if I see you and you're running around like crazy, I'm just going to come into your office. And this whole aspect of feedback, which we could talk about that in itself for an hour, Sean, I'm going to demonstrate I'm not giving you feedback because I'm punishing you. I care about you, Sean. I care about you as a colleague, as a having a family, maybe whatever. And Sean, here's some things I really want you to think about. And by the way, Sean, it isn't going to be easy. It's going to be tough. So once a week, you and I can talk about it and I'll give you some examples. I'll give you some techniques, whatever, but I care about you and I want to help you. And if I think it's really important and you work for me, I'm literally going to say, hey, Sean, I'm holding you accountable for this. You know, you can tell me it's hard, but by the way, pal, if you keep telling me you're working on 10 things when I'm telling you can only work on 3 and you don't get your act together, you're not going to be here. And I care about you, but I can help make that happen through leadership development, talent management, whatever. Okay. If you're my peer, okay, I'm going to try to do it by example. I'm going to let you know I care a lot about you. I will prove, and this goes beyond words, Sean, but I'll prove to you that I have absolutely no agenda other than to help a colleague out. This is not about me. And if I can demonstrate that, I think I can change your behavior. Now, the last one is the hardest one, let's be honest, is what do you do with the people up there, right? Because some of the people up there, either don't get it, don't want to get it, or let's be honest, we've all worked for a few people in our career. They're just not good people. I mean, they're just, you know, they don't care. And you look at some of these people and you say, what happened to these people? I mean, did they have the wrong parents? I mean, something went wrong with some of these characters, okay? Well, how do you impact those people? And I think I have this whole concept, Sean, I write about called leading up, right? How, and now I switch it. Now you're my boss, okay? And you're telling me, okay, Harry, we'll finish this Saturday and Sunday. And I think, well, I got 5 kids. I'd like to be home with them Saturday and Sunday. Well, how do I convince you that I will get the job done? It's not about not getting the job done. It's having the flexibility to figure out when I can do it. And if I can demonstrate to you that I'll never let you down. This is not about getting the job done, Sean, but I'll tell you what, instead of coming in Saturday and Sunday, you tell me what you need on your desk at 8 a.m. Monday morning. It will be there. It'll be there. But you know what? I'll do that when the kids are taking a nap on Saturday or Sunday or something. But I can only do that if I prove to you that I won't let you down. See, because the one thing I am sensitive to, Sean, is some people say, oh, well, maybe we'll get the job. No, as I said earlier, we've got to get the job done. But I have found, probably more than anything, Sean, personal example really helps the most. In fact, I'll give you one more example, Sean. You're a vice president. You've got 5 directors working for you. I'm one of the 5. And each of us have 10 people, okay? And you don't treat people well. You don't get it. But you're watching the 5 of us, all right? And what you're starting to observe is everybody wants to work for Harry. And nobody wants to leave Harry's area. And what's going on? And then you start to realize, hey, maybe it's the way he's treating people. Maybe it's the way he's developing people. Maybe he's starting to look at this from a values perspective. And even though you don't start to get it, you start to realize maybe there's something to this that I just don't understand. Because I try to be idealistic enough, Sean. Some of those people up there, the reason they don't get it is that they weren't raised that way. They never thought that way. But potentially they're teachable, particularly through your example. That's been my experience.
That's great. Thanks, Harry. Thanks, Sean, for the question. We're all going to enroll at Northwestern in the executive MBA now, Harry. You realize that. Yeah, we're coming to your class. But
there you go. There you go.
Myrna, you had a question for Harry. Come on off mute.
Hi there, Harry. This has been great so far. Thank you so, so much.
Oh, thank you, Myrna.
I've worked with people on both professionally and personally who have a value system that, you know, they were raised in a family, high value family where education and work productivity was number one. And they feel guilty or they feel like they're not being productive if they take time to think about, you know, what is their responsibility socially? What's their responsibility to their family? And I'm sure this happens quite often. Their family gets neglected. Their spouses get neglected. How, and some of these people have been to, you know, psychological counseling for decades, spent thousands and thousands of dollars. Yeah. And at some intellectual level, they understand they need to change their value system. They need to focus on other things and find that balance. But actual and practicality, they never change a thing. So how does that, I'm thinking about this mathematical model that you're talking about for some of these individuals, makes a lot of sense because it's all about, it's almost like financing your life. It comes down to dollars and cents. How can that translate really for them to make those changes? What recommendations do you have?
Yeah. So Myra, you ask really fantastic question. And for me, I try with everybody I come in contact with to literally get people to take some quiet time to reflect on these things. A quiet time. And there's sort of two pieces to it, Martin. You do a little bit of this yourself, but you remind me a big part when I teach, I talk for a long time about, you got to find some people who you feel close to, who you trust, that'll be really open with you, not making you feel good, and can give you a sense of whether or not you're really doing what you say you're doing, right? So with my wife, Julie, she'll often say, Harry, left to your own devices, you could convince yourself of anything. Do you want to know what I think? Now, the answer to that question, after being married 40 years, had better be yes, right, Mary? The answer to that better be yes. And I would say, you got to find a couple people, Mark. So if I was working with you and I'd say, hey, this is a great lady, she's got good values, we're working together, I'm gonna take you to lunch. And I'm going to say, hey, Marna, here's some things that are real important to me. These are, if you say to me, well, here, what's important? And then as I'm describing what's important, let's look at the two extremes that you could respond with, Mara. On one hand, you may say, here, I'll give you the good and the bad. The good side is when you say to me, hey, Harry, thanks for telling me your values and what's important. But I got to tell you, based on your actions, I could have guessed. I mean, you're living your values, and that's fantastic. Now, the other side's a little scarier, right? When you say to me, wait a minute, Harry, based on your actions, I'm amazed you're deluded enough to think those are you're like Dr. Jekyll and Mr. You're like two different people, right? So we can all fool ourselves. But I think if you find people who care about you and you care about them, and you, those people you can be honest with, I think they can help you think this thing through. Have you really thought about what you're doing? Okay. You know, hey, you're saying you're doing, you know, typical thing, Mark, I'm sure you've seen this. You know, you got twin 10-year-olds and you say, well, geez, are you really spending a lot of time with your child? Well, no, I'm going to do that later. I'm going to do that later. Well, hold on a second. You know, not to confuse you, but 8 years from now, they're going to be off to college. They're going to be gone. Okay. Don't be surprised that 8 years from now, they'll be 8 years older. Listen, don't be surprised. Okay. And so getting people to just realize the implications of what they're saying. And this is at all ages, Merritt, and it requires you to find some people who can help hold you accountable, and finding ways that you can just turn off the noise for a short period of time and assess whether this makes any sense or not. That's the only way I know how to do it. And you can't do it by yourself, but I think the self-reflection piece becomes very, very important.
Pretty pivotal. Thank you. Thank you, Harry.
Sure.
That's great. I'm going to go to Session. I don't know if I'm pronouncing your name correctly.
My name is Karthik. Thanks for that. Hey, Harry, thank you so much for your insightful presentation. So I really appreciate it.
Sure.
I heard you mentioning about following, doing the right thing a few times. So my question is around righteousness. So it is that, like, while following righteousness, how do you know if you indeed are doing the right thing? And what if you do not have the necessary knowledge to do the right thing? For example, like somebody, you know, who grew up in a disadvantaged community without access to the right opportunities and right knowledge, how can these kind of people ensure that they are doing the right thing? So that's pretty much
Fantastic questions. And this comes up a lot, right? So the way I look at it is, there is no scenario, and this is not a humility comment, there's no scenario I can figure out what the right thing is by myself. And that's why I will surround myself, and maybe it's the purpose of organizations like what you guys are doing with Leon. I've got to find a lot of people. And it's not one, it's not two, but I want to be able to have 20, 30 people, Card. I can call up and literally say, hey, Card, what would you do with this situation? What do you think the right thing to do is? And I'm gathering a lot of that information. I always quote this St. Francis comment of, I seek to understand before I'm understood. You know, for me, it's a little bit, hey, Sean, what do you think? David, what do you think? Tom, and I take a lot of that in, and then I think about it, I reflect on it, and say, okay, you know what? In an uncertain world, this feels like the right thing. But to your point, it may not be. But that's why I said I will try to do the right thing. And by the way, if I start to do something and it turns out that I was wrong, that there's a better thing to do, I'm not going to let my ego get in the way. I'm going to say, oh, stop a minute. Hey, Martin raised a point. I hadn't thought about that. Let's change and we'll do that. But there's this constant view in an uncertain world, we'll try to do the right thing, and we'll do the best we can. And if it turns out there's something better, we'll explore that. That's the way I think about it.
Okay. Yeah. Thanks for that.
Sure.
Thanks, perfect. Thanks for the question. Carol, come on off mute.
There I am. Oh, there we go. excellent, Harry. My question relates to recent experience. I resigned from a board. It had to do with COVID-19 signage, where the sort of populace wanted to put up a sign that was sort of dismissive of public health directives, the municipal, the provincial, the federal, and that's the sign that they wanted to put up. And in my view, I just could not stomach this. So I resigned. I know it was the right thing to do, but it's not an easy thing to do.
Yeah.
Can you provide some insight into those particular situations?
Yeah. Well, I commend you, Carol, because it sounds what you said, you're basically living your values. And I think in the world we're living in now, if more people live their values, I think the world would be a heck of a lot better place. But what's unique in, from what you just said is you clearly have an appreciation of what your values are. See, one of the dilemmas we got in the world, and I just think about some of the craziness we have going on in the States, is I don't think we got a lot of people that have taken the time to figure out what their values are. In fact, Carol, there was one executive who said to me, Harry, you keep talking about the values. How do you define values? And that's why I love teaching, because it gets me to really think about these things, right? So I reflect on it and I said, well, I think part of the problem may be, Carol, and you can tell me what you think of this. I think there's a big difference between values and preferences, right? So if everybody on the screen here was on my team and I was the leader and I said, okay, you know what? I really would appreciate it if we don't use four-letter words. I'd really appreciate that, right? Now, if David does that, I'll tell him I don't like it, but I don't think I'm going to fire the guy because that's a preference. But the way I think about values, Carol, is two things. One, they're non-negotiable and you will not compromise them. See, because if you're willing to compromise them or they're negotiable, well, then it sounds like a preference, right? And so in my mind, if it's a value and the organization isn't doing that, the way I look at it, and I feel pretty strongly, I'm in an organization like you were, and something happens like that. Well, some people would say, well, I'm just going to leave right away. Well, the way I look at it is the first thing I'm going to do is I'm going to see if I can use my influence, my ability to relate to people to get them to change, right? Because to a certain degree, if I just immediately leave, well, the situation is going a direction that I didn't want it to go, and I didn't do anything about it. So my view has always been, okay, I'm going to sit down with the senior people, I'm sure you did this, explain why I've got a problem with this, why we'd be better off doing something else, and letting you know I'm open to it. I'll seek to understand. Maybe there's something I'm not familiar with, but either that's going to change or I won't surprise you, but I'm going to have to leave. And I found it remarkable the number of times somebody say they're going to do something, and then when you bring values into the topic, and they're just people that just didn't realize it or think about it, that they end up changing 180 degrees. But if it's a value, you stick to it. And no one said it was easy, right? No one said it was easy, but you know, no one said leadership was easy. But that's why I commend you for stepping up and doing the right thing.
Thanks, Thank Carol. You.
Yeah.
Leanne Nicol, so here's Leanne's the CEO of Big Brothers Big Sisters, but
oh wow!
Just on this previous note, I mean, poor Leanne, you actually resigned on one of those, exactly that, and went through that. Anyway, I'm not going to go into it, Leanne, but the questions here has come off you.
Hi. First of all, Harry, I feel like I'm finding myself applauding over and over and over again, and I want to use all of the like high fives, because the challenge isn't, I think, putting the words on the wall. The easy part of values is living into them. That is the challenge. We have actually at Big Brothers Big Sisters incorporated our values into the Kaizen performance management. And my question is, do you have any framework or like we just did it. So welcome to charity. But wondering if you have any framework or accountability structure that could be incorporated into performance management with the, how has this employee lived into the values over the course of the last quarter or half year or whenever your check-ins are?
Yeah, so great. I'll give you a couple thoughts. And first of all, I applaud you because Big Brothers Big Sisters, unbelievable organization. In fact, I don't know if you guys are connected across the world, but one of my close friends and fellow executive of mine about, I think it was about 10, 12 years ago, he ended up becoming the president of Big Brothers Big Sisters in Chicago. I don't know if you ever ran into Art Mullenauer.
No, I have. I've only been with them just almost 3 years, and I just joined the North American Task Force. So unfortunately, our paths probably didn't cross. But it is a phenomenal organization. The outcomes are outstanding. So.
Yeah, I mean, talk about making a difference in the world. I mean, just absolutely phenomenal. And so the way I've done this, and I do this on all 10 boards that I'm affiliated with, I tell folks if it's important. Then you better measure it, right? And you've all heard that expression. If you're not measuring it, it isn't going to happen. So if you say, hey, it's very important that we're developing people and we care about people. Well, are we keeping track, Leanne, of how often you're giving feedback to everybody on your team? What's the development plan for everybody on the team? Okay. And literally you're scoring people how often it's happening. Is it happening to 100% of the team members? If you say, hey, guess what? One aspect of us is doing our job, but another aspect is making a difference in our community. Okay, what are the things we're doing in our community as a team? Now, your entire role is doing that. But in a company, literally at Baxter, we would say, hey, we expect every single person at least 3 or 4 hours a month to be doing something to make a difference. But it can be up to you. It can be your church. It can be a soup kitchen. It can be, but we're expecting everybody to play one role or another. And this whole idea of measuring, of, okay, what of the people that work for you, how many of you have helped be promoted? Okay. How many folks are in a better position now than they were before? And to the extent that sometimes somebody has to leave for whatever reason, Are you helping that person leave in good standing and find a job someplace else? Because, you know, they were the only one single breadwinner in the family and they needed to go to make more money. And have you reached out and helping each one of those people? But to me, it's a sense of anything that's important had better be measured. And as we all know, in companies, a lot of times people will say, well, people are really important. But every time you talk to a senior person, the only thing they ever want to talk about is the numbers, right? Well, if all we're talking about is the numbers, yeah. Are people really important? So I always quote, Leanne, I think it was Andrew Carnegie. It was a steel industrialist 100 or so years ago in the United States. And he had a great quote. He said, the older I get, the less I listen to what people say, the more I watch what they do, right? Everybody watches what the leader does. Mm-hmm. So I always look at it as that's the power of being a leader. You have an enormous influence. The problem is, look at what's going on in the United States right now. I mean, it can be either for good or bad, and it becomes a real problem. Real problem.
Thank you for that question. I know we're coming up close to 12 here. One more question we're going to go to. Is that okay, Harry?
Sure.
Then I also want you to come back to 1 acre for a second. But Jeff, can you come off mute? Mr. Peters? I know Jeff well, too. I know these people too well.
Yeah, I'm off mute, Leon.
All right.
Harry, thanks. This is fabulous. I had a question. So, you know, you talk about surrounding yourself with people that you can pull and you know, get insight into doing the right thing. And sometimes the people on your team share your values. But if you just surround yourself with people who do share your value, then the opinions that you're going to get are pretty limited. Sometimes those are technical. Sometimes those are, I'll say,
cleaning toilets.
Yeah, moral or whatever.
I'm going on my class now.
Oh, sorry about that.
I'm sorry, Jeff. You're kind of coming in and out. So the part that I heard was you got a team and they share a lot of the values, but then you said something else.
Yeah, I said, you know, a lot of people would like you to have similar values on the team, but then you might limit the opinions you get on really what the right thing to do is if you have everybody that shares your values. So I'm just curious.
Yeah.
Sometimes, you know, and sometimes you're working with people on a team and you know they don't share your values, and sometimes those are around people or whatever and you know it's a problem. But, you know, there's lots of times where it's important to have people with different values to give you a better perspective. What's your thoughts on that?
Yeah. So Jeff, it's a great question. So here's the way I think about this. Great question. And here's another one of these. If we went, we didn't have a chance to go through all the principles. There's four principles. Okay. One is the self-reflection. Another one is balance. A third one I refer to as true self-confidence. And the fourth one is genuine humility. Those four principles that I go through in the first book, From Values to Action, that's the core of all of this. And the way I think about it, Jeff, is to your point, I want to have as many different perspectives. Here's a balanced thought. I want to have as many different perspectives as I possibly can. So when people talk about diversity, okay, I don't view it as just racial diversity, gender diversity. I want opinions. I want an engineer. I want people from around the world. I want as many different perspectives as possible. Except when it comes to what I'm referring to as values, that's the piece that I want to have pretty much in sync. And when I say the values, you know, hey, this is the way that we're going to treat women. This is the way we're going to treat one another in any dialogue we're going to have. All right. This is where I think it was Leanne who made the comment before. You know, if we put something on the wall and say, this is the way we're going to do it, this isn't just some happy thing on the wall. People are going to realize you either live that or you're not going to be here. But I don't need diversity of opinion related to the values. I need a diversity of opinion related to everything else in terms of running the organization. That's the way I think about it, Jeff.
Yeah, thanks. That's helpful.
Sure.
That was a great answer.
I'm you know what, Leon, some people have to go because why? Because they've only got 168 hours. So but if there's a few more questions, I'm willing to take a couple more minutes if there's questions and you want to do that, Leon, either way.
Well, I've got, I think we've answered all questions on the group chat. I could ask tons of questions here, but Harry, can I get Kelly to throw on? I just want to put your book cover up there again, and I want you to just maybe talk a little bit at 1 Acre. I know you mentioned it a little bit, but if people wanted to look into it a little bit more on the 1 Acre Fund.
Oh, wonderful. Okay. Yeah. So it was funny on the, related to the book, when I put it, my brother, who should know better, but my brother said, what's this 168? And I explained to him, he goes, Harry, no one's going to know. So my brother takes credit for the little circle of make every hour of your week count. He said, they may not realize that's the number of weeks. So he's looking for royalties by putting that little box up there. That's the brother of mine. Okay. So the reality of this is, and this is, in my mind, a great example, because I know many of you, you know, in addition to your careers, are trying to make a difference. So the story that I mentioned to you, Leon, goes like this. I talk about in all my classes, and I'm sure you have a lot of this up in Canada as well. You talk about all the issues in the world. You talk about global poverty, global healthcare issues, the digital divide, the environment. And in my classes, Leon, I usually say, and I mentioned this in the book as well, we usually say there's a group of people that are going to deal with all these issues. It's this group of people we call those guys. There's some magical group of men or women somewhere. No, we are those guys. I mean, you know, if we're not the men and women that are going to do something about this and do the right thing and make a difference, who are they? And so the best story, I got a lot of stories, but the best story on this one was a student of mine who went to Yale undergraduate, worked for 5 years for Oliver Wyman, came to Kellogg. He was going to go back and be a consultant, Leon, but he took a church trip to Kenya. And he came back and he came in and he said, Harry, you know what? I think I'm one of those guys. I said, what does that mean? He goes, I'm turning down that job. I'm moving to Kenya. I said, you're moving to Kenya? He goes, yeah, Harry, you can help me raise a little funds. Harry, what I realized was two things. Harry, I don't know if you realize it, but somehow we've allowed ourselves to convince ourselves in places like the United States and Canada that it's okay for a billion people around the world, you know, not to be eating. And he said, I don't think we can deal with that. This was 11 years ago. It was 2009. And he said, the second thing, Harry, I'm doing a lot of research. He goes, do you realize that 80% of the peoples that are not eating are farmers? And he goes, how does a farmer start? How does that doesn't even make any sense. He's a very bright guy. And he said, I've been over there. He said, the farming technique in a lot of these areas, it's a little bit like it was in Rhode Island or Massachusetts in 1600s. He said, if we could get these folks better seeds, better fertilizer, basic irrigation, I think we could double or triple the crop yield on their farms. And by the way, the reason it was called 1 acre is that when Kenya got its independence, for those history buffs, when they got their independence from the British in 1963, if you were a Kenyan citizen, you could get a 1 acre plot, but they can't grow enough to keep their kids alive. So he starts this thing called the 1 acre fund. Well, gets better seeds, raises the money, fertilizer, whatever. I brought my five kids over there several times. Here's the stats, which I don't expect you to believe until you look up this website. He's been there now for 11 years, Leon. He's hired 15,000 Africans. He started in Kenya. He's in Kenya, Rwanda, Uganda, Tanzania, starting in Ethiopia. As of 3 weeks ago, they have doubled or tripled the crop yield on 1.1 million farms that has saved the lives of 4 million children. So when the first, as I said earlier, when the first book came out called From Values to Action, I called him up. And by the way, any of you that watch TED Talks, go to the TED Talk on Andrew Youn, Y-O-U-N, who's the head of this organization. It's an amazing TED Talk, Leon. You'll amaze it. And he literally said, you know what? I'm not coming back. I'm not coming back. And I said, hey, the title of my first book is From Values to Action. Andrew, you're the best living example. Other people talk about it. You're living it. So I told him 8 years ago, I said, what I will do is once a month when I'm not teaching and I'm not on boards, I will do talks for companies, associations like yours, Leon. And any speaker fee, I'll just say, hey, just make a donation to the 1 acre fund and just buy a bunch of books. So all for the 1 acre fund. And today, my talk with you, Leon, I think is my 993rd talk in the last seven. I do two of these a week for the last eight years. And he's not coming back. He's not coming back. And when you watch the TED talk, instead of taking a lot of pride in what he's done, he says, Harry, I think we're 2-3% of the way there. We got a long way to go. And I don't know what it is at your colleges, Leon, but at Northwestern University, to get an honorary doctor's degree, usually you have to have invented a planet or something or been, you know. At the Glass graduation, the guy's 38 years old. He got an honorary doctor degree. And then for our Kellogg graduation that we usually bring in a leading CEO of a company, he gave the commencement address. The guy's 38 years old. So when I get excited about it, I have to give these examples so people realize this is truly happening. So I appreciate Leon getting a chance to talk with your team. People feel free can get books online. And if you do, by the way, if you happen to buy the book, my publisher said, hey, you can write a little, Leon, this is for you too. You can write a little quick review of the book, only if you like it, Leon, because they tell me people that see good reviews end up, buying more books, and 100% of the proceeds all go to the 1 acre fund in Kenya. So, and he's very serious. And this picture, I love this picture. When he says, meet our boss, that was the other wonderful thing, because I think a lot of really well-intentioned Americans, Canadians, they want to sort of help them out. We're going to fix this for you. And his whole discussion is farmers first. What do you want to grow? What can we do for you? But it's yours. It's not ours. And they have plotted this out where not only they get to the seeds, the folks, he's gotten some lawyers to work out the contracts. So when they bring the grain to the cities, they don't get ripped off in Nairobi and these places. So he's got truck fleets. I mean, it's literally, it's a nonprofit that actually been phenomenal. So I appreciate, Leon, you highlighting this for the folks. And
absolutely. My pleasure.
Anybody has any follow-up questions? Oh, or maybe the last comment for folks. Always one more, Leon.
Yep.
My Kellogg students about 2 years ago, I think you know this, Leon, because I do all these talks, they said, we're going to set up a website for you. And I said, I'm 60 years old. I don't need a website. And they said, no, we're going to set up a website. And it's such a great website that people are saying to me, boy, what did you pay for this thing? I said, I didn't pay them. I mean, these students did that. And I said, well, you ought to pay them. So I said to the students, what do I owe you for this? By the way, the website is just harrykramer.org, harrykramer.org, Kramer with two E's. And I said, what do I owe you? They said, you don't owe. And they said, no, you do owe us. You do owe us. I said, what do I owe you? They said, you need to start doing a blog post. To, of course, I asked the obvious question, what's a blog post? They said, Harry, don't worry about it. You send us an email, you know, on whether it's COVID, leading in crisis, whatever, the whole situation we've got in the United States right now in Minnesota. You send us an email, we'll take care of the rest. And Leon, I don't know how they do this, but when I'm traveling, students will say, oh, I saw on Instagram or LinkedIn. I said, I'm not on these things. I said, Harry, you're on everything, okay? You don't know it, but these kids have got you on everything. So that's the whole story, Leon.
That's fabulous. That's great. Well, Harry, thank you so much. And for those that are still on the call, please do take a look at the 1 Acre Fund. You're 168. I read your book this week, Harry. It was one of three books I could grab at Amazon when I ordered it a few weeks ago. They're starting to get back to normal on their shipments. But I would tell anybody, I mean, it is a really easy book to read, and it was excellent. It really was to get you to self-reflect.
I really appreciate it, Leon. Really appreciate it. And I'd say, Leon, if anybody has any follow-up calls, all the questions for reflection, all that stuff, it's all online at theharrykramer.org. And then people can follow it. So if they have any questions, send me an email. I respond to every email. Every email I get, I respond to. So happy to do that for your team, Leon.
That's wonderful. Thank you so much. So just in closing, thank you all for joining us today. And if you're interested in any other Way Forward live webcast, please visit us at peo-leadership.com. We have a number of recorded past webcasts that have included different leaders from really all over North America now. Next, I guess in 2 weeks, we'll have Joe Jackman, founder and CEO of Jackman Reinvents, talking about his new book focused on the customer. So really looking forward to that. So on that note, I'm going to conclude today's session, and I'm going to grab Harry's little thing here, Harry's brother who wants the royalty, make every hour of your week count, especially as you go into the weekend. Thanks everyone for joining us today.
Thanks, Leon. Good to see you, everybody. Take care.
All the best.